We have Mayor Jeremy Grimm from the City of Sandpoint and Jason Welker, City Planning Director and Community
Development and Planning.
And planning.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. There's a ton of things to talk about because the city always has a ton going on. But let's start with parking, because there are a couple big things that are happening. The closest in time, I guess, would be the reconstruction of the downtown parking lot. So, I don't know, Jeremy or Jason, you guys are both, you know.
That's probably a Jeremy one.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, no, lots going on with parking. You know, part of my focus during my term is to really invest in our existing infrastructure, not look out and build new fancy things, but take care of what we have. And we can do a better job taking care of what we have. So that's going to start this year with a repavement and a sort of realignment of the downtown city parking lot that will be going out to bid this week. We'll probably see construction activity in mid-April there. It's going to take about 3 weeks. And during that time, people will not obviously be able to park in the downtown lot. We are going to accommodate that by not enforcing parking, paid parking on the street in certain areas. You'll still need to maintain the hourly limits on First and Cedar, but those other areas will not be enforced. So that parking lot is in desperate need of a refresh. It hasn't been repaved, as far as our research showed, since we've owned it. And it's, you know, in my opinion, it's one of the entry gateways, the front door to our community for people, and it really reflects on, you know, what we are as a community. First impressions are hard to change, so we'll be putting some new asphalt down. We'll be preserving most all of the trees. We'll be planting new trees, and the biggest change people will notice in that city parking lot is we're changing the approaches how you enter and exit. Instead of entering exit from Oak and Church, you will now enter from Third, right across from the hardware store. So that's the biggest change, and that's going to provide some benefits. If you've ever been there, there's a lot of activity in front of Joel's and over by Jeff Jones Square. So we're trying to eliminate
Church and Oak. Yes, respectively,
right.
Yes.
So we're trying to eliminate those entrances just because there's so much going on there, and just have people enter on Third. So that'll be a little change. Change is sometimes takes some time to adjust to. So I'm sure people have opinions, but we've given it a lot of thought, and that's an alignment that'll work real well. So we'll have that wrapped up by the start of the kickoff of the tourist season and event season, Lost in the 50s, and have a new parking lot there at the downtown spot. So,
my first question is, it's a pretty fast schedule. Do you have providers that can get the work done? Don't have stuff already on their schedule, so right, they can't fit it in even.
It is a fast schedule, it's not too complex. They'll basically be removing the asphalt, digging down a few inches, putting down some fabric, some new base rock, so it's a stable, good, you know, base to build on, and then laying down about 3 inches of new asphalt. So we'll put it out to bid, as I mentioned, in the next week. We never know what kind of bids we're going to get, how much interest we will get in a project. But my engineers are telling me that we should get some pretty competitive bids. So, exciting. And it's not hectic out there in the contracting world right now. As everyone probably's noticed, things are kind of pulling back, and there's a little more caution in the development world right now. So I think we'll see some good bids.
I'm wondering, will there be more parking spaces with the reconfiguration? Do we know?
There's a change from compact and a reduction. Right now, there's a lot of non-standard parking spaces there. If you drive a large truck or a big van, it's hard, especially on those easternmost next to the bank, the spots. So there's an overall change. There's a net increase of just a couple. And the next thing people should be aware of is one of the other reasons we're doing this is we're preparing this parking lot for a paid parking system. Director Welker, who's here, is working on a parking policy that's going to be downtown wide. And that's going to include paid parking in our city lots, which we used to have until just a couple years ago. And we're prepping this project in the downtown lot, so we'll have the technology to have people be able to just drive in, enter their license plate and their spot in a kiosk, and they'll pay, or either they'll have a parking pass or they'll pay a fairly modest fee to park there. So all of that's being integrated into this. And then finally, we're working on putting two kiosks down there that are what they call digital paper. It's a very toned down digital board that will show the city calendar and events going on at City Hall to try to keep the public more engaged and aware of what's happening in Sandpoint.
So where you pay or validate your parking, there'll be a announcement board?
It's actually, right now it's going to be on the southwest corner and the northwest corner. So one facing the park and one kind of facing that intersection at Oak and Third.
Interesting. That's a new, Church and Third. Factory Church and Third. There.
Yeah.
We're going to have a little bit of
engagement. Yeah. You know, that's one of the things. It's frustrating. We always hear that, you know, the public's not aware of what's going on. How does the public get engaged? And we've done two things recently. First is that if you go to the City of Sandpoint's webpage, you can sign up for alerts. You can get automatic email or text notifications of all of our agendas, our committees, our events. And then secondarily, this is another push to at least try to get those calendars in front of the public. I get it. We're all working and managing and juggling families and medical conditions and other things. But the more we can do as a city to get the public aware of what's happening, you know, we always love feedback and want to hear from our residents and business owners.
Mm-hmm. So people can go to the city website, sandpointidaho.gov, and they can actually see a little schematic on this. Is that right?
You'd have to go currently into the previous city council agenda to see that, but shortly, I mean, it's a parking lot. It's not too exciting.
Well, but, the Reader and the Bee had pictures, I guess the biggest change actually is going to be the fact that you're not going to enter the parking lot from either Oak or Church now. You're going to get into the parking lot from Third Avenue.
Correct.
And then potentially the paid parking, but we'll talk a little bit more about that as part of the big plan. So for the parking lot, the budget for this is $400,000. Is that correct?
It's probably a little less than that. We won't get the bids in, but we're going to be primarily funding this through our urban renewal district, and they have a fairly healthy budget for the downtown improvements. But I would guess right now between $300,000 and $400,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You won't actually know until you get those bids.
That's
in.
Right.
So this could always be a surprise there too. So, I guess I want to talk more about the overall parking plan for downtown, but before we move on to that, what kind of feedback have you got on the parking lot changes?
The changes to the parking lot, not a lot of feedback. We, if the public's not aware, I stood up all of our committees and commissions, which had been mothballed and closed down under the previous administration. Those include the Tree Committee Commission, Parks and Rec, Bike Ped, and other sustainability.
ADA.
And ADA, thank you, Director Walker. You got it. we've run the project through those public committees. Both the parking policy for paid parking and the design went through the tree committee. So they gave us some input about which trees to preserve. And other than that, not a whole lot of public input. Again, it's kind of a quiet, it's not a big change people are going to see. And of course, we don't know what the future of that downtown parking lot is. But this has been in the works for over a decade to try to resurface it. So I'm all about getting projects done and trying to show the public we're doing some good work.
When you mentioned the committees that you just mentioned, the tree committee, the sustainability, the ADA, that just brought to my mind that there are places, if you have ideas and you see things and you want to be engaged in the city, it doesn't just go to a voicemail. There are actually committees that can hear you.
That's right. And, you know, those committees are so important because, not only they're a resource to the city council and myself as the mayor, When we need special direction or knowledge about an issue, they can serve to vet these things. But more broadly, you know, they know people and have family members and friends. They can actually clarify what's going on. They disseminate and bring in feedback from their our residents and our community members. So, yeah, it's a great interface. It's something that we're continually tweaking how it works well and efficiently. But, yes, those committees, if you're interested, you can apply to be on one at the city website. And we always have turnover. So, yeah, if that's your thing.
You should be a city resident?
For most of those committees and commissions, you have to be a city resident. There are a few exceptions that allow experts in fields that are not city residents, but the majority are residents.
So if you have an idea that you want to send over to ADA committee, the website has a link, a portal or like that?
You can send it to the city clerk or to myself, or we can get those to the committees. You can talk to those committee members. But it's always a balance. Again, those committees are there to support the council and mayor. Mm-hmm. So it's really the mayor and council directing their work, saying, hey, we're working on this project. We need your advice. But we're always open to hear how we can do things better. Those committees aren't necessarily just out there in the wild looking for problems. We know what most of our problems are, and we're trying to address those.
They're open to citizen engagement.
Yeah, and they're open. These meetings are open to the public, so the citizens can and residents can speak to
various
those committees.
Commissions. Yep. Yeah.
And they meet monthly right now.
And just to point out, each committee and commission has a city council liaison. So there's a city council member that sits on each of these commissions and a staff liaison. So members of the public who come are not being heard just by unelected commission members, but also elected city council members and, full-time city staff who right. are at these meetings.
Mm-hmm. When this came up for a vote at the February 19th city council meeting, it seems like the main concerns were about trees. And since then, you did have the tree commission weigh in on it. And, after this came up and I was walking through the parking lot, I did see some trees that don't look too healthy, actually.
Yeah. There are some unhealthy trees there. And I think the bigger problem and what I was really looking for is, hey, we've got 6 or 8 trees in there. We're going to be excavating, doing this properly. Is that going to damage these? Do they have a chance of surviving? What lengths do we go to try to save these? With the unknown that in 10 years, that parking lot, there's been a historical discussion about a parking structure there, which someday the city will need. That could be a building someday or a parking structure. So, it's that balance of how much effort do we put into saving trees versus the reality that it's a downtown urban parcel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's keep the conversation on parking and talk about the, parking management plan. I think,
sure.
Jason, you're kind of the primary architect there.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us where we're at right now? I know it's intended to come before the city council at the next meeting, is it?
Or possibly in April. We'll see how our outreach goes over the next few weeks and see if we're ready for that. Mm-hmm. We have a bit more outreach to do, which I'll mention later. Mm-hmm. Little background: last winter, I guess early winter, the mayor directed me to start thinking about this as potential upgrade to our downtown parking facilities as we go into resurfacing the city parking lot. Simultaneously to that project being in the planning phase, the parks department, myself and our parks planning and development manager, were writing grant applications to try to raise the $1 million+ we will need to resurface the city beach parking lot as well. So that both the city parking lot of 3rd and Church and the city beach parking lot, as far back as we can find in the record, there's no record of the city ever having undertaken a major improvement at either of those lots. The city parking lot of 3rd and Church we acquired in 1976 when the old Farman School was torn down. That was the site of the original Farman School. And the City Beach parking lot, we took over maintenance of City Beach around 1986 from the Lions Club. And it's not been a there's been no resources since then to actually do a major resurfacing. I actually have on my desktop background on my computer in my office a picture from the late 1970s taken from, I don't know, a hot air balloon or an airplane or something, and the City Beach parking lot looks identical to how it does today. There's been no major overhaul in 50 years as far as we can tell. So we're really working towards maintaining our infrastructure. That's the mayor's main focus. And to that end, the Parks Department has been working on grants and funding sources to redo the City Beach parking lot as well. But one of our goals is to achieve a sustainable funding mechanism to maintain those into the future. We don't want 50 years from now, the people in our positions to be faced with the same decrepit infrastructure that we are today. So part of that is coming up with a parking management plan that includes paid parking downtown so that we can generate revenue to maintain our infrastructure into the future. Additionally, another objective of this parking management plan is to basically increase convenience and availability of parking where Sandpoint residents need it. Sandpoint taxpayers are putting their money towards projects like these resurfacing jobs. But anybody who has experienced Sandpoint during peak season knows it's nearly impossible to find parking at our downtown parking facilities during the summer months in particular. We know that the City Beach parking lot is full by 9 a.m. during most summer days. So that means most city residents who show up later in the day just don't have access to the City Beach parking lot as it is. So a paid parking system is being explored. It's in the draft parking management plan that we've been working on. And the goal there is to both increase availability of parking for Sandpoint taxpayers and to generate a sustainable funding mechanism to maintain our parking infrastructure into the future.
Mm-hmm. So there have been some different numbers thrown out for what the annual parking fee might be. Mm-hmm. But why don't you just describe the structure mm-hmm. of the parking fee, the way you have it
sure.
currently
Sure. So the current, first of all, it's nothing's as simple as it seems when you start on a project, right? And what we knew from the beginning was that we wanted to have an option for city taxpayers to have access to a very cheap annual pass that provided them with almost all of their parking needs at city parking lots. And the simple rationale there is that their tax dollars, you know, are already being collected by the city to maintain our infrastructure. We haven't seen any dedicated funding for parking lot improvements. So despite already taxing Sandpoint residents, we haven't actually been able to generate much money to improve parking in particular. But nonetheless, we did the math. We worked backwards. We worked with our city engineer to come up with the actual cost of parking in Sandpoint. We call it free parking, but it's absolutely not free. As you heard, we're about to spend $400,000 to resurface the city parking lot. That's about $85 per Sandpoint household. So, you know, if you spread that $400,000 out across our 3,000 or so households, this is actually being paid for out of Sandpoint taxpayers' pockets. Yes, it's urban renewal, but that's money that could have gone towards other essential infrastructure downtown. So the free parking that we have is not free. It's paid for by city taxpayers. So the goal was to come up with a parking pass option. And the current draft of the plan proposes a $15 annual parking pass that provides Sandpoint taxpayers with either 3 hours of free parking at the city parking lot by Joel's or 6 hours of free parking at the City Beach parking lot. Six hours. Okay. Yep. Of course, we've heard a lot of feedback. The original version of this plan proposed 2 hours at all city lots, mm-hmm. but this has been loud and clear the most prominent feedback we've gotten through five different presentations to committees and commissions. We've presented this to the Chamber of Commerce, and tomorrow morning we have a Downtown Business Association special meeting at City Hall to go over this proposal. We've also put out a survey that's received almost 1,000 responses now. And the number one request is that we provide those city residents whose taxes are already going towards infrastructure with basically enough time at City Beach to enjoy a full day at the mm-hmm. beach. Mm-hmm. So we believe that 6 hours is a pretty generous amount of time to have free parking if you're a city resident mm-hmm. at City Beach. So the proposal is a $15 pass to provide either 3 or 6 hours of free parking at our downtown lots. And then a similar pass would be available for $30 to anybody else, county residents, non-county residents, tourists, to allow for 2 hours of free parking at all city parking lots.
Okay, so the non-residents, non-city residents get a two-hour pass.
Two-hour pass, okay. Yep.
So a pass. So you pay $15 once a year to park at the beach for mm-hmm. 6 hours any day of the summer.
Correct.
It's not each time you go down.
It would be you go in, you can stay for 6 hours any day of the year.
And for $15?
For the whole year, yes.
For the whole year.
Yeah.
Okay. Just to be clear, you don't pay it each time you go in.
No, it's you're not paying $15 each time you go.
So how do they manage Okay, you've been here 5 hours and a half.
Yeah, good question. So we're looking at, and you know, in the preparation of this proposal, I've done a deep dive on the history of efforts to fund infrastructure in Sandpoint. There have been, as far as we can tell, up to 5 attempts to roll out paid parking at city parking lots in the last several decades. Obviously,
and we did actually have paid parking downtown.
Yes, we did end up with paid parking meters.
Even
We had paid parking downtown for over 40 years in Sandpoint from 1947 through 1985 or till the late 80s. Those parking meters were removed. We also had paid parking at the city lot until 2016. One of the reasons we abandoned that was that the system involved almost no technology. You had to drop your money in a little tube. And we had Diamond Parking, a private company, managing that program. And nearly 100% of the revenues generated went back to Diamond Parking for enforcement. So it was achieving one of the two objectives of the current plan. It was allocating demand away from the city parking lot by putting a price on those otherwise free spots, but it was not generating revenue to support infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So what we're looking at now is what's called frictionless virtual enforcement parking systems. Frictionless meaning there's no gates. This is all done with license plate readers. I equate it to the toll roads that you might experience when you drive into, you know, Seattle on the 520 bridge today or something. When they rolled out tolls on that bridge across Lake Washington, I had a lot of anxiety at first. I thought, am I going to have to wait in a line at a toll booth and pay with a card or cash? What if I don't have the right change? It's going to be a nightmare. But then I realized when you cross the bridge, a license plate scanner scans your license plate, and a week later you get a $3 bill in the mail. It's going to be something similar at the city parking lots. If you are a pass holder, your license plate will be in the system. When you enter a city parking lot, the license plate reader will recognize you as a city resident, and you will, and the clock will start ticking. You'll have your 6 hours of free parking. If you leave within 6 hours, a license plate reader will scan your plate on the way out. You have to pay nothing. If you're there for 8 hours, you'll end up paying for two. So that's another, I think, misconception is people have heard, oh, I get 4 hours or I get 6 hours of parking. Will I get towed if I stay, you know, longer than 6 hours? No, that's not what we're saying. It's saying the clock doesn't start ticking for those city pass holders until they've exhausted their free parking time.
Modern technology.
Yeah. And a system like this requires very little human enforcement. There might be some involved with kind of double checking the what the computer systems are suggesting in terms of stay times and things like that. But generally, if you're a non-pass holder, so let's say a tourist comes up from Spokane for the day, they enter the parking lot, their license plate is scanned. They have now 15 minutes. I'm just going to say 15. We can make it 30. We can make it 10. Let's say they have 15 minutes to make their way to a kiosk, to enter their license plate, and to start recording their stay at the City Beach parking lot. If they come and they stay for 3 hours and never go to a kiosk and then they leave, they will get a virtual ticket. A ticket will come in the mail because they did not pay for their parking. They have violated our paid parking policy. If they are there for 3 hours, but they don't start paying until hour two, they will be charged on their way out for the 2 hours that they didn't pay for. Okay. So this is it's virtual enforcement, frictionless, meaning no gates, and very little human labor needed. And that's been a really important priority of the mayor's.
Yeah, because the money that you collect could end up just going to the enforcement
yeah,
side of
it. I mean, even a basic enforcement employee is going to cost the city quite a bit of money. I mean, let's even say minimum $60,000 a year with benefits, insurance, taxes, et cetera. So, yeah.
So if you're a resident and you spend more than 6 hours, so you're going to owe some extra money. But what's the hourly fee going to be?
So the proposal right now is for 2 hours is kind of our base, or sorry, $2 per hour is going to be our base rate at the city parking lots. And at the City Beach lot during the summer, just those two peak summer months, that would go up to $3. And the goal there is to get those non-pass holders, those non-tourist pass, or sorry, those non-resident pass holders to really contribute meaningfully towards the infrastructure. We estimate the cost of maintaining our 505 parking spots off street, that's how many there are downtown in Sandpoint, 505 off street parking stalls is around $300,000 a year. That's the actual cost. Now, that doesn't get spent every year, right? But every few years, we spend $400,000 here to resurface an entire parking lot. And every year, we're doing crack sealing. We're plowing these parking spots. We're putting asphalt patches down. We're doing a lot of ongoing maintenance. There are real costs with that. So the goal here is to have one of the attendees at one of our presentations at a commission meeting said, make sure the juice is worth the squeeze. $1, $2 might not be enough. During these summer months, if you're going to charge for parking, charge a meaningful amount of parking so that some of these tourists might even be discouraged for going to City Beach. That's actually something we want. We want to encourage visitors to go find other places to enjoy the lake. City Beach is literally overrun. And right now, tourist use of City Beach diminishes and it, to some extent, just destroys the experience for locals.
Yeah, Jason, let me just jump in there. This is Mayor Jeremy Grimm. So I talked about paid parking when I ran for mayor. This has sort of been a third rail or, you know, a very controversial issue over history. My perspective and what I ran on was putting Sandpoint residents first. I used to go to City Beach quite frequently. I find that I don't go there as frequently, in part because it's so busy. And when I go to City Beach, I see license plates from Spokane, Kootenai County, Canada, and elsewhere. And those are the predominant license plates some days down there. So, you know, I've seen and heard of some controversy about this on Facebook and social media. I want to make it super clear. The Sandpoint residents and businesses are the ones who pay for the maintenance of these parks. They are built for Sandpoint residents. Yes, we enjoy attracting people here. It's a wonderful place. Visitors support some businesses. But the reality is we are operating the best and most amazing free lakeside park in the Pacific Northwest. And who wouldn't come from Spokane to come and stay here all day for free and bring your coolers and your Costco pizza boxes and leave your trash? I am 100% in favor of making these parks available to our residents. That's the population who's paid for them. I've heard a lot of county residents and friends and family members I have living in the county who say, We pay for that City Beach. That's our City Beach. Well, I'm sorry, but you don't pay for it. I'm looking at my tax bill right now from the county. And if you have the privilege of living in Sandpoint, you will see a line item on your tax bill. For my tax bill, that line item, Sandpoint taxes, $2,100 that county residents are not paying on their tax bill. So the reality is,
property tax.
Living in Sandpoint, you are paying a lot more taxes, and you are funding these parks. And I am very firm that our residents should have priorities in these parks, which is why the parking pass is set up to give Sandpoint residents a significant discount versus county residents or even tourists. Yeah. But still, even with that discount, without the discount, we're talking like a dollar something a month. You know, again, these are times where we need to generate revenue with cuts in the federal level. We need to take care of ourselves, and we need to do that with a sustainable funding mechanism to take care of our infrastructure. Mm-hmm.
Chris, if you don't mind, I'd like to take a little journey into history here. I happen to have in front of me an article written by this renowned journalist named Chris Bessler from the December 21st, 1982 issue of the Bonner County Daily Bee.
Are you trying to put some age on me,
Chris? I had no idea how old you are, but I'm very impressed that you were writing for the Bee 43 years ago. And 43 years ago, a group of citizens in Sandpoint put together an effort to give county residents the opportunity to pitch in towards the maintenance of City of Sandpoint recreation facilities.
With a recreation district,
okay? I'm going to read just a couple lines from this article. So your article opens with, a proposed recreation district for Sandpoint and outlying areas was resoundingly defeated Tuesday when voters rejected the proposal by a 5-1 margin. Over 2,000 people voted against this opportunity to contribute some tax money on their tax bill towards city recreation infrastructure.
This is a countywide. It was district that would have gone outside.
It would have gone down to like Duford Road, out west towards Laclede, and out east towards Hope.
Way beyond the city boundaries of the
and
city itself.
I think not surprisingly that effort was defeated soundly at the polls. But the article goes on, and you quote the organizers of the taxing district effort. The defeat means that people who reacted against a new tax will end up paying user fees, a possible beach fee, and making donations that will end up costing them more than the new tax. Quote, the people that wanted user fees are going to get them.
Yeah, and Chris, this is a thanks for bringing that up, Jason.
That's what the city officials were saying. This is the impact of not having a recreation district that chips in.
Yeah. Right, and here's what I want all of your listeners to understand. Bonner County has grown by over 12,000 residents in the last 10 years. Okay. City of Sandpoint and Ponderay provide almost all, I'd say virtually all sports and recreational facilities for the entire county. Field of Dreams, Travers, and our sports fields here in town. And I guess what I would ask our county residents and our county elected officials to consider is you've grown by a significant amount of folks over the last 10 years. What is the county doing to provide lake access, recreational facilities, and amenities for their residents? As far as I know, the county's only real park or recreational facility, we've got Garfield Bay, which is like a launch with a few picnic tables, and a small park in Priest River. But the county really is not providing these access points or services or offerings to a growing population, and they have many mechanisms to do that. So I would say it's time for Bonner County to step up. If anyone takes issue with having to pay a dollar a month to park at City Beach, tell your county commissioners to step up and figure out a way to provide and build lake access and other recreational amenities for the county residents.
Good point. And talking about parking, you mentioned, Jason, a survey. People can get involved. Do you want to talk about that just for a minute?
Sure. Yeah, I think on Thursday or Friday last week, we pushed out our parking satisfaction survey. The survey is not exactly about paid parking. It's more about how are our public parking facilities serving the community? That's really important for us to know as we develop this parking management plan. And again, this is not a paid parking policy. It is a parking management plan that includes paid parking. But the goal here is, again, to increase availability of parking to city residents whose taxes are going towards their maintenance. That parking survey went out. It can be found at www.sandpointidaho.gov/parking. Very simple. That will take you directly to the survey. As of yesterday, we had received almost 1,000 responses.
So I put it in mine, just so you know.
It's going pretty good so far. I think the mayor's planning to email our city residents who you know pay water bills through their email in the next couple of days. And really important plug here, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., myself and Holly Ellis, our public works director, will be hosting a parking meeting at City Hall for downtown business owners. So this is specifically for owners of downtown businesses. We're going to run our parking plans and the plan for the city parking lot and the closure that's coming up next month past downtown businesses so that they're aware of what's coming in the next couple months and get their input on the parking management plan so that we make sure to take into account the needs of those who employ hundreds of people in our downtown business core because they're an important user of our city parking facility. So 8 a.m. tomorrow at City Hall, City Council Chambers.
Planning of the parking situation and parks and things like that. It's always good. There's a lot of opportunities to get involved. I want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is your independent, commercial-free community radio station here for North Idaho and beyond. You can find us at 88.5 FM, or you can stream us at krfy.org. And today is the morning show with Chris and Susie, and we're talking with Mayor Jeremy Grimm of the City of Sandpoint and Community Planning and Development Director Jason Welker, also from the city. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot to talk about. We just covered the whole parking situation.
Well, we haven't covered it all. So if, okay. Again, let's throw that parking satisfaction survey out there again. That's at sandpointidaho.gov/parking.
Yeah, and I found out you do need to put the www at the beginning.
Oh, you do need to put that.
Yeah, if you don't, it'll take you to a dead link.
Okay, so www.sandpointidaho.gov/parking.
Correct.
If folks want to see the current draft, is that on the website?
Again, similar to the plan for the parking lot resurfacing, it's available with recent commission and council agendas.
So you'd have to go to those.
The current plan is literally being updated daily. Yeah. I've made dozens of changes since the first draft that was presented to planning and zoning back in January. So we don't have like a live draft that you can view, but at the next committee or commission meeting that gets presented at, it will once again get published to our agenda packets. And we expect that to be in April sometime.
Okay. So the management plan's in development, and if you want to weigh in on it, go to that satisfaction survey. And then we'll see how you cook all the ingredients, what you come up with.
The sausage making.
Yeah.
So
I can tell you that, you know, people think that they complete these surveys and they go off into a void and never get read, but it's absolutely not the case. Yeah. We are reading literally hundreds of written comments on this survey and studying the results. It's very important that we hear from the community of users so that we get these policies right.
Okay, well, that's parking, and it's a big thing, but we do have other things going on with the city that we wanted to touch base on before we run out of time here in about 15 minutes. One topic that was in the news recently was that the Russell Sports Center, that the operational costs are, I don't know if they're higher than expected or the revenues are lower. Why don't you tell us what the situation is there?
The costs have not been much higher. They're not really higher than we expected. We're pretty much on budget in terms of costs. The issue is that the usage is lower than we expected. And we, you know, this facility was designed 2.5, 3 years ago with two primary user groups in mind, the tennis and pickleball communities. As you know, it has 4 tennis courts and 14 pickleball courts. And in the first 4 months of operation, we have really been focusing on engaging the tennis and pickleball communities in its use. The membership levels, which is our primary kind of baseline funding source for operations of the sports center, have been lower than we expected in our community engagement leading up to opening. So based on community engagement in the year before we opened, we expected, you know, around 300 paying members to join on. We've been at around 130. So that baseline revenue has been around half what we anticipated, and that's what's going to pay our, you know, the front desk staff salary, the full-time facility supervisor salary, the utilities, the cleaning costs and things like that. So those costs have not been higher than we anticipated, but the revenues have been lower. Usage is surprisingly high. We're getting, you know, on average between 80 and 100 users a day. So it's quite unusual to go in there and not see at least half of the facility occupied. The challenge is the baseline membership levels. So that's what we're really going to try to do in the next month or two is do more engagement with the primary user group, the tennis and pickleball communities, to get those membership levels up. But we're also beginning to explore alternative uses of the facility. So it really is a sports center, not a tennis and pickleball club, despite what some in the community like to claim. So we're working with other community partners and other sporting groups to get more involvement in there. For example, we've had the high school lacrosse team practice in there throughout the month of February. Between 20 and 40 male and female athletes were in there 2 or 3 nights a week practicing lacrosse. That's an important source of revenue for the facility because they're paying for that court space. But it's also a great way to get more people engaged in the recreation that goes on there. We also have registration open right now for a 3-week fly fishing program at the sports center. They'll be practicing casting on the courts and doing classroom sessions in the community room there. That's going to run for 3 hours over 3 Saturdays in April. Mm-hmm. So that's actually live. Registration is available at the City of Sandpoint website under the recreation programs section of our website. So that's in partnership with Trout Unlimited, but 100% of the revenues from that will go towards the facility. Mm-hmm. The instructors are all volunteers. They're you know, Trout Unlimited avid fishermen who just want to share their knowledge with the community. So we're working with more community groups to get other activities, programs, sports going on in there. And we are 4 months in, actually this right around today, we're about 4 months into operation. So we are early in the process, we're expecting this first year to be kind of ramping up and figuring out how to optimize the use of that space. We have explored some other potential court surfaces that could be laid down seasonally for basketball and volleyball. Chris, I know you're a huge advocate for basketball at the Sports Center. So am I. I was a college basketball player, so we're looking at getting basketball and volleyball in there because right now the city, frustrating to me, leases volleyball and basketball court space at the schools and at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. To me, that's outrageous. We have a world-class sports facility. We should be using our own sports facility and keeping that revenue in the city of Sandpoint.
Is the high school using the indoor courts, tennis courts?
6 days a week right now.
Do they generate revenue?
Yeah, the high school pays for that court space, so that's helping support the facility. And in fact, that will boost our numbers in the next couple months as they're about a month into their season now. But that's regular, 20 hours a week or so they're paying for court space right now. So that contributes.
Yeah, and Kristen, I just want to emphasize, this is Jeremy, the mayor. This was a tremendous gift to our community. I mean, I think no one would argue with that. Almost an $8 million facility. But, you know, the city was challenged to fund what we try to fund right now. And in the hierarchy of needs in the community, I might have this wrong, but what I frequently hear is, are the toilets flushing? Does the water turn on? Do the police and fire come to your house if there's a problem? And can I drive on the roads? Those are the hierarchy. And we don't have enough money even to do those the way we want to do them. So when we add this new facility and it doesn't cover its cost, we've now just, you know, wounded ourselves further. So what was intentioned to be an amazing and is an amazing gift could potentially provide and propose a problem to our budget. So we have to absolutely ensure that this facility isn't another, you know, drag on revenue or hole in our budget. Jason and staff and the community are going to have to work on a plan to figure out how this thing breaks even. If it doesn't, we can't bleed money out in this facility because that's going to take from something else that we don't have enough money to do.
So yeah, the idea that the user groups that use these different facilities or infrastructure should be the ones that primarily...
Right. Or alternatively, and I hope we don't end up there, you know, we have a lot of outdoor tennis courts and pickleball courts and facilities. And right now, those are pretty much use them, come and use them if they're available. And I mean, conceivably, I guess under what I'd call worst case scenario, this facility may simply be a, you know, a covered, you know, open space. I mean, if we can't provide the services and the amenities there, then maybe it just becomes an open space where, you know, you come and we have someone unlock it every day and you use it. I just don't know what the solution is at this point, but we're working hard. Jason's working hard with some great staff to figure that out.
Way too early to throw up your hands on
that's right,
Mayor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so, things will change and shift.
Yeah.
It's just becoming known that we have this world-class, as you say, facility, and I have a feeling it will evolve.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of requests from different user groups for use of the facility that we can't accommodate right now because it was designed, unfortunately, with some limitations.
Right.
Right. The court surface just doesn't work for volleyball, for example. If someone were to dive for a volleyball on that, it's straight to the ER if you dive for a volleyball on that court surface. So we're, you know, there's a huge, we have 16 teams participating in our city volleyball league right now. Mm-hmm. It is our most popular in terms of users. Over 200 people are participating in the city volleyball league. But every one of those volleyball sessions is at the fairgrounds and we're paying for it. So we need to get volleyball into the sports center. That's going to happen this year.
What will it take?
It will take a surface that we can put out seasonally over the tennis courts that can be removed during high school tennis season since they, you know, are a priority user group that provide generous revenue for the facility. But for several months a year, we're looking at having a court surface that's optimized for volleyball and basketball on some of the courts. Not all of the courts, but on at least two of the courts, we would likely be rolling out not literally rolling out, but putting out an alternative court surface that we could do various sports on there. And then having that surface on there would allow for, you know, other sports to do indoor, seasonal indoor practices as well that just don't really work on the rough tennis court surface that we have in there now.
And this is for all age groups too. You know, we want to be have
kids. Oh, well, even I should say right now our recreation department is going to be doing the Tiny Tots basketball program in the sports center with just some temporary hoops that we can put in there.
And we have seniors walking in there right now. It's open to, you can walk around if it's raining out the next week if you want to go stretch your legs.
It is a facility that has, I don't know how far is it around?
It's 1/6 of a mile.
A sixth of a mile.
Around the perimeter.
So you do six laps.
Six laps, you've got your mile. And it's every time I'm a tennis player, every time I'm in there, there are people walking around the perimeter right now, especially on those dark, rainy days.
So there's an actual track around the
edge? It's not like a racetrack. You couldn't hold, you know, high school races on there, but it's a walking path. Yeah, it's separated by curtains, so you're not getting hit with balls.
Yeah.
I did not
know. And that's free, no membership required. Drop in. We've got a little lobby area with comfortable furniture. Come in and socialize. Get out of the elements.
I just went in there the other day. It's great.
It's an absolutely beautiful facility. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the cool thing is, as much as it's struggling right now, Mayor, I encourage you to come and experience it sometime. People who are using that facility are having fun. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful, fun, warm, welcoming facility that people are really enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it raises the...
Just happens to be expensive.
It raises the quality of life here.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, it raises the quality of life here, but it's, you know, I got to figure out how to...
Yeah.
To make it work financially.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a solution there somewhere.
For sure.
You'll find it.
We're going to run out of time here, but you gave a little segue when you say, when Mayor, when you said you want to make sure the toilet's flush.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about the wastewater plant, since it's a big need here to upgrade the plant, or actually renovate it entirely.
Yeah,
and we've actually had some wastewater plant violations recently.
We have. This is from the start my number one priority for the city. If you're not aware, our wastewater plant dates from World War II. Portions of it came from Farragut Naval Base and were repurposed. It's beyond its useful life. We've been working for the better part of a year and a half to complete a preliminary engineering report, which is going to be done in about another 3 weeks, that we have applied to the state for potential funding for the construction. Our engineer's estimate right now, I hope everyone's sitting down, $130 million. That has a nice contingency built into it, 20 or 25%. But this is a huge project. We will be going out for a bond most likely this fall. We will be asking the voters of Sandpoint to approve probably a $60 million bond, which allows us to borrow. Everyone should be aware your rates for sewer have been going up the last few years. They're very expensive. That was done so that we can pay back this bond. So we have the revenue from our rates to go into debt and to pay that debt service. But we don't know exactly how much state and federal dollars, how many we'll get to support this project. That's the big question. Yes, we've had some violations. About 3 weeks ago, we had some pumps fail. We had an overflow of sewage at the plant. It was literally a sewage pond down there in the buildings everywhere. These pumps, many of them are from the 1960s. They don't even make parts for many of them anymore. Just this last week, we had a E. coli violation where our discharge into the river had E. coli in it. Actually, today, Idaho Department of Environmental Quality is on site with a whole team doing a full audit of the plant. And although that sounds scary, it's actually a very good thing for us in the sense that if a plant is operating without concerns, you rank very low on the funding needs. Plants that are catastrophic and having failures rank higher. Our staff has done an incredible job keeping us out of trouble, keeping the water quality at high levels. But it is a daily struggle down there. Every day, our plant operators are fixing pumps and running temporary hoses and pipes, and it's almost cruel and unusual punishment to have somebody try to operate that plant. So Devin and his team do an incredible job, but I guess to put a bookend on this, we're going to replace the plant either in pieces and parts or entirely, and that's going to depend on what kind of federal and state funding we get to match our user fees that are going to go into this plant.
And a bond request is going to be likely.
This fall, we need, I mean, so that bond request will go to the voters. It'll ask them to allow the city to go into indebtedness up to a certain amount, probably about $60 million to start actually doing this work. If all works out well, we could start to see, we'll jump into design, and then we could start to see by probably 2027 some actual reconstruction of the elements of this plant. So we just don't know if it's going to be all six major elements or just we're going to have enough money to do the first four major elements, the highest needs such as disinfection or digestion or primary treatment. So it is working through the process, and I hope to finish up my mayorship with this plant under construction, if not completed. So.
So the bond request, does it require a simple majority to approve it, or
I believe it is a simple majority, Chris. I forget. I get confused with the local option tax.
Local option tax is 60%.
Yeah, that's a super majority. I believe the bond is just a simple majority. Yeah.
And so that's going to be has to go through council, I presume.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. This fall, there'll be a very active campaign, educational campaign. So voters know exactly what the challenges are. We are hosting currently weekly meeting or monthly meetings on the sewer plant. If you want to go and learn about what the problems are, go to our website. You can see those notifications and certainly contact the city if you have specific questions.
So you mentioned the bond. I mean, I'm sure it's a very loose number right now. It might be as much as $60 million. That means on a $130 million project that you're going to be getting, you're anticipating state and federal funding to come in at a pretty big chunk.
Yeah. There have been some examples in the state where communities have gotten up to 50% grant funding. Obviously, this is not the best time to be doing this. With the federal debt, the national debt, the ideal time would have been 3 years ago when they were literally giving buckets of money to water and sewer infrastructure through the Recovery Act. We missed that window. We're going to do our best now. I don't expect a tremendous amount of federal and state money to support this, which means we'll probably have to look at an incremental or piecemeal approach to replacing the most critical systems and which ones are failing.
And do it over a longer period of time.
Do it over a bit longer period of time. But I'm working hard at all levels to try to get funding for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are about at the end of our time now. Got 1 minute to lay anything out there that you might want listeners and constituents to know?
You know, just it's spring season, which blends into, you know, the busy time of the year here. So as we evolve here into summer, a lot of great events going on. We've got on the economic development front, we've got some new jobs at Timberline Helicopter. We've got another new business that's going to be opening on the corner of Woodland and Great Northern. On the housing front, I heard that our housing situation is improving vastly, up to 15% vacancy rates at our multifamily units. So we've seen a lot of new inventory come on. Prices should be coming down. So that's going to really help our economic development efforts. If we have available housing, we can attract jobs. And my big goal here is to move us away from a tourism-based economy and have a year-round, sustainable, very broad-based economy in Sandpoint that works for all people.
And we actually do have a pretty diverse economy.
We do.
Compared to other pure tourist towns like Sun Valley.
We are so lucky. We've got aerospace. We've got computer tech. We've got biomechanical. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, just so many different types of manufacturers and business here.
You brought up one thing. I got to squeeze in one last question. So what is the business at Great Northern and Woodland?
You know, we don't have the end user, and there's no requirement for a developer to tell us who the end user is. I believe a logistics and transportation company.
Well, it's not. I don't think there's a reason we can't. It's an Amazon micro distribution center.
Yeah,
that's not a secret anymore. They've been building these all around. It's not that it ever was a secret. It's that there was, you know, just not, as the mayor said, it's the current occupant is going to be Amazon for that warehousing facility. And it is a micro distribution center. The business model will be one truck per day comes in from a warehouse, and several vans each day deliver out for one day delivery. That's their goal, is to get one day delivery to the greater Sandpoint area.
And if you drive out that way, you will see that's under construction right
now. And that's a fairly small facility, 26,000 square feet.
Yeah. Well, big for here, but small for them.
About two-thirds the size of the James D. Russell Sports Center.
All right. Comparison. Well, we are out of time. I want to say thank you again to Mayor Jeremy Grimm and to Planning and Development Director Jason Welker for coming in, giving us your time, filling us in on all this stuff, and we'll have to get you back because there's so much left to talk about.
Let's do it every month.
City talk, we call it.
thank you, guys.
Thank you for coming in. It's always good to hear what's going on in our awesome, amazing city of Sandpoint, Idaho.